Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, May 9th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A faction of the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai insists it will send another letter to Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda recalling some 11 members of Parliament aligned to Tendai Biti's new renewal team.
The Speaker is not saying that the MDC may not recall its members of Parliament. The Speaker also did not say that Mr. Biti has the exclusive right to recall members of Parliament or to protect them.
African election observers endorse the outcome of South Africa's just-ended polls, declaring the vote was free, fair, transparent and credible.
Another lesson here is that there is no violence and that the campaign is certainly, for the majority of what we've had and the reports we've been looking into, certainly free and fair.
And observers say President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party will not be able to harmonize over 250 existing laws with the new constitution before the 2018 general election.
The Movement for Democratic Change formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says it will send another written request to Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mdenda recalling some 11 lawmakers it accuses of rebelling and working with the so-called MDC renewal team seeking to remove Mr. Tsvangirai from the helm of the party. Mr. Mdenda yesterday dismissed the two letters presented to him by the warring MDCT factions regarding recalling some members of the party from Parliament. He urged the two factions to settle the matter in the courts. The response by Mr. Mudenda has been hailed as a victory by both factions. MDCT spokesman Douglas Monzora tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the MPs will be recalled next week.
The Speaker did not say that the MDC may not recall its members of Parliament. The Speaker also did not say that Mr. Biti has the exclusive right to recall members of Parliament or to protect them. What the Speaker simply said is that there is no application before him. What that means is that at the time of writing these letters, the MDC had not yet submitted the list of the members of Parliament it wants to recall. It is only when that happens that the Speaker will intervene. Therefore, what that means is that the position remains that the MDC is allowed in terms of the law to withdraw its members of Parliament. It also remains that Mr. Biti is not the person to communicate with Parliament, but the Speaker will act when we submit a list of recall, and we are going to do that.
Any date for this?
Well, it is going to be very, very soon. Sometime next week, the Speaker will have in his position the letters from the MDC.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Monzora speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. But MDC renewal team spokesman Jacob Mafume says Monzora is misleading himself and his faction.
The Speaker of Parliament is ruled on the side of democracy. The Speaker of Parliament is ruled on the side of the rule of law. He has protected our MPs who were being victimized by Tsvangirai, who was threatening to chase away people who he didn't vote into Parliament. As you know, they were voted by other people. If he is unhappy with the Speaker's decision and position, the Speaker has rightly pointed him to the court. We are delighted with the ruling, and we've protected our MPs, we've protected the vote of the people, and the party goes forward.
We understand from the other faction that they are going to write another letter to the Speaker recalling what they are calling, quote-unquote, rebel MPs. Your response to this?
It's only a fool who does the same thing twice and expecting a different result. What do you expect the Speaker to say? He said that there is a dispute in your party involving members of Parliament and non-members of Parliament. And he says he cannot adjudicate on internal disciplinary issues of the same party. His position is clear.
That was MDC renewal team spokesman Jacob Mafume on the line from Harare with Blessing Zulu.
Election observers from the African Union and the Southern African Development Community today endorsed the outcome of South Africa's just-ended polls, declaring the vote was free, fair, transparent and credible. AU mission leader and former Ghanaian President John Kufuor told a press conference that the Electoral Commission had managed to conduct the elections in a transparent manner, adding the Commission's officials had demonstrated, quote, remarkable knowledge regarding the voting process. Although the final tally has yet to be made, the results out so far give President Jacob Zuma and his African National Congress Party a clear mandate after securing a three-thirds majority in parliament. The result also guaranteed Zuma of a second term as president of South Africa. The ANC won in all but one of the country's nine provinces, losing out only in the Western Cape, a traditional stronghold for the Democratic Alliance. The ANC leads with 62.23% of the vote. The DA comes second with 22.14%, while Julius Malema's Economic Freedom Fighters sits at number three with 6.3% or 24 seats in parliament. For perspective, Ntungamili Nkomo reached political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of the Huddersfield University in England.
I think that the conduct of the election itself, and which partly is what the African Union mission is talking to, is fairly exemplary for a big economy and an advancing political system such as the one that South Africa now runs. And I think that this is a positive sign for the rest of Africa. However, of course, there are some similar trends in this election as are elsewhere in Africa, where the existing ruling parties, such as the ANC, gets to get the bulk of the vote and seems to have an undisturbed trend of winning. And I think that that is troubling in itself. But, of course, you do have dominating parties in the US and in Britain. So it's not just limited to Africa, but that would need to change. The performance of the EFF is something that we have got to be very proud of and get an example in terms of how new political parties themselves get an opportunity to participate in an election process. So the performance of the new opposition party is certainly very encouraging for the African political system.
Any lessons for Zimbabwe from this election, Dr. Sibanda?
A number of lessons here that new parties that challenge the status quo must be allowed to campaign just as hard. They must not be unnecessarily vilified, and they must participate in the political process just as well as they could. Another lesson here is that there is no violence, and that the campaign is certainly, for the majority of what we've had and the reports we've been looking into, certainly free and fair, and that there's been very little disagreement between the political parties in terms of the date of the election and the conduct and so forth.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of the University of Huddersfield in England.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. If you are in South Africa, listen to Studio 7 through the following number, 010-591-6465.
If you are in America or Canada, you can tune in to our phone number 712-432-5882. Once again, 712-432-5882.
If you are in Britain, call 033-00-10334. Once again, 033-00-10334.
Observers say President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party may not be able to harmonize over 250 existing laws with a new constitution before the 2018 general election. They say indications are that ZANU-PF may fast track most of the laws in the run-up to the polls, a situation that will benefit the party, which currently enjoys a parliamentary majority. The observers say recent attempts to fast track the enaction of the Zimbabwe Electoral Amendment Bill into law are a sign of what is likely to come towards 2018. Tawanda Chimini of the Election Resource Center tells Studio 7 lack of action in harmonizing the laws is a cause for concern.
We are worried at the pace with which Parliament is attempting to conduct this exercise. We are worried with the level of seriousness that is being depicted by our current members of parliament. I think it's about time somebody aged, particularly the electorate, aged their parliamentarians to be serious about parliament business. The question that we're posing to them is, what is the point of going to parliament if they're not making law? What is the point of going asking for votes if they're not taking their work seriously?
Now, how long is it going to take for the laws to be panel beaten to conform with the provisions of the current constitution?
Given the fact that our new constitution actually says there should be public participation in any changes to the laws that will happen or in the business of parliament, it should not be an overnight thing for laws to be amended. It would be very difficult to say how long should it take, but on an average, for a law to be drafted, for a law to get pass the parliamentary legal committee, and for that law to then undertake to go through the various readings that it has to undertake, and for the process to be as inclusive as is possible and as demanded by parliament, it should take quite a bit of time.
That was Tawanda Chimini of the Election Resource Center speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. But ZANU-PF activist Morris Ngwenya disagrees, saying there is no money to harmonize the laws.
We need a lot of human resources to look into the laws in order to align them. It's not just about aligning laws without carefully studying them so that they don't contradict the constitution and so that they conform to the dictates of the new constitution. Therefore, those are the requirements. So it's about human resources as well as financial resources in order for that work to be done. Secondly, Parliament is definitely overwhelmed by work. There are a lot of, if I'm not mistaken, the Minister of Justice and Legal and Parliamentary Affairs was talking about 800 perhaps pieces of legislation or law that need to be looked into, and that need to be aligned to the new constitution. Therefore, that's a lot of work required to be done. So I think the progress is being done at the moment, but perhaps if resources were available, that could be done with great speed.
But Mr. Ngwenya, critics are saying that the problem is that ZANU-PF is in power and has got a two-thirds majority in parliament, so they are not in a hurry at all. Is that the case?
That is a very shallow statement. Laws cannot be made in a hurry. They should never be made in a hurry. There should be due diligence and due care in looking into them and aligning them to the constitution.
That was ZANU-PF activist Morris Ngwenya on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
businessman Nigel Chanakira speaks on the World Economic Forum.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A human rights group says Nigerian security forces had advance warning about the raid on a girls' boarding school in which militants kidnapped more than 300 students. Amnesty International says Nigerian security forces failed to act on warnings that began coming in more than 4 hours before Boko Haram fighters attacked the school in the town of Chibok late on April 14. The rights group blamed the lack of action on an inability to muster troops due to poor resources and a possible fear of engaging with often better armed militants. Amnesty Today said that it learned of the warnings from local officials and two senior military officers. There was no immediate reaction from the Nigerian government. At least 11 U.S. military staff officers have arrived in Nigeria to help find the 276 girls that are still missing.
The South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are in Ethiopia to meet for the first time since fighting and ethnic violence erupted across South Sudan 5 months ago. Reporters for VOA in Addis Ababa say the meeting originally scheduled for today will likely be pushed back a day. Officials with the East African bloc IGAD, which is mediating peace talks, say the rebels and government will sign a peace agreement. A rebel spokesman tells VOA the rebel delegation is looking over the document. Negotiations have dragged on for several months with little progress, while violence has killed thousands and displaced more than 1.2 million people. In a report released yesterday, the United Nations said both sides may have committed crimes against humanity.
And Russian President Vladimir Putin has arrived in Crimea on his first visit to the peninsula since Moscow annexed it from Ukraine in March. Mr. Putin is expected to oversee a military parade and celebrations marking Russia's World War II victory in the Crimean port city of Sevastopol, where Russia's Black Sea Fleet is based. Earlier today, Mr. Putin watched from reviewing stands on Moscow's Red Square as 11,000 Russian troops marched and weapons from the nation's massive military arsenal were displayed in the Russian capital's annual Victory Day parade. Meanwhile, fighting broke out again today between Ukrainian security forces and pro-Russian militants in the southeastern Ukrainian port city of Mariupol.
The three-day World Economic Forum in Abuja, Nigeria, which has been overshadowed by the kidnapping of more than 200 girls by Islamic extremist group Boko Haram, ended today with a major highlight being China unveiling a $42 billion investment plan for Africa. Chinese Prime Minister Li Keqiang said the funds will be channeled to economic development on the continent. China, he said, is ready to provide financing, technical and human resource support to the region's economies, while also increasing its investment financing to about $10 billion and extending credit lines to African countries to a total of $30 billion.
Zimbabwe is set to benefit from the China-Africa Trans-Regional Infrastructural Cooperation, which is set to develop a high-speed rail network connecting all African capitals. Zimbabwe, which did not send a government delegation to the forum, has close ties with China. But relations have been weakening with President Robert Mugabe and his ministers publicly denouncing Chinese investment in the country as not benefiting the country at all. And businessman Nigel Chanakira was in Abuja. He's also the current chairman of the Zimbabwe Investment Authority. He spoke with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu and told him that the kidnapping of girls was a major cause for concern at the forum.
As you know, there was the kidnapping of 254 girls from a school in Nigeria. And the first thing, of course, was to show solidarity against terrorism. You know, for us to actually still go to what is now the largest economy on the African continent and just make sure that that conference is not a failure. So there was a cancellation by about 10% of the people who should have attended. And I'm proud to say that Zimbabwe obviously was well represented in terms of participation by certainly the private sector.
But how secure did you feel in Nigeria?
Okay, well, it was well secured because what they did, you know, they basically shut down the town of Abuja after the bombing and then the threats on the hotels. So Abuja itself, they declared a three-day holiday, which in essence that meant that it was not as much traffic as is normal, and it allowed the security measures to be fully deployed.
Let's talk about the takeaways from this forum. How significant was it?
It was significant because clearly now we are at the end, towards the end of the 2015 MDG goals. And so clearly new parameters being set up and consolidation of the African Union plans for the next 25 years. I think that was a key feature in terms of discussing it. And then central to the discussions were issues pertaining to the youth. As you know, the youth population is perhaps restless. in terms of unemployment, job opportunities, and then getting them to participate as part of the policy formulation. So we had quite a number of young people. I know I certainly facilitated for the attendance by at least four young global shapers, so that they could make sure, you know, they participated and contributed to the ideas and interchanged, you know, ideas with other young Africans and then young global leaders from the rest of the world. So I think the cross-pollination of ideas was basically, you know, very, very useful. I think also what became very evident is the investment flows that are targeted to Africa, and to allow, for example, Zimbabwe to, you know, be cognizant of those. I chair the Zimbabwe Investment Authority, and China, the Chinese delegation, made a commitment of investing $30 billion into Africa in the next couple of years. So that was an increase from the 20 that they had pledged before. But they see huge opportunities in terms of infrastructure, investment into infrastructure, rail, roads, airports, etc. Then there were some very, very simple ideas that were very good takeaways. For example, allowing, you know, people to move across countries. An example was given by the ADB, where the ADB has a passport, which is endorsed by all African governments of 54 countries. And in essence, an ADB staff member literally doesn't need a visa to go across the borders of each African country. And those are very simple ideas that we can actually operate. Then the Chinese gave us an example that we don't have to reciprocate where, for example, there are visa restrictions, say, by the United States against Zimbabweans, then we impose regulations as well. So we end up with a situation where, while we need more benefits from, say, the United States in terms of investment flows, tourism, we then make it very difficult for these people in terms of visas, simply because we are reciprocating.
Lastly, there are some economists who were saying maybe the government missed out by not sending a government delegation at this forum. Your thoughts on that?
The cross-pollination of ideas is always something which I think is an imperative. I believe sincerely, and this is something that I would recommend always to government, we must always participate and send delegations. And if it means we can't, it's a question of affordability, then look, the local embassy staff, we have a Zimbabwean embassy in Nigeria, in Abuja. There is no reason why our embassy staff, our trade, mission staff cannot attend.
That was businessman Nigel Chanakira, also chairman of the Zimbabwe Investment Authority, on the line from Abuja, Nigeria, with Blessing Zulu.
Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona, and Ndebele? Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318. Again, 1-202-465-0318.
Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During his 2013 State of the Union address, President Barack Obama called for the eradication of extreme poverty worldwide by the year 2030. One of the keys to achieving this goal is to prevent and control diseases that disproportionately burden the poor. This includes vector-borne illnesses, those transmitted by mosquitoes, flies, ticks, and bugs, such as neglected tropical diseases. Over 1 billion people suffer from one or more neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs. Sometimes also called diseases of the forgotten people, these illnesses affect mostly people living in rural areas and urban slums of low-income countries. They are most common wherever access to clean water and sanitation is lacking, and where children suffer from malnutrition. NTDs are devastating both to those who suffer from them and to their communities. Many of these diseases can impair intellectual development in children, reduce school enrollment, and hinder economic productivity of entire communities by limiting the ability of infected individuals to work. These usually treatable and preventable diseases include schistosomiasis, elephantiasis, trachoma, Chagas disease, river blindness, leprosy, Kala Azar, dengue, black fever, and other forms of leishmaniasis, and the three most common infections, the soil-transmitted parasites hookworm, roundworm, and whipworm. Together, they cause as much damage as HIV, malaria, or tuberculosis. The United States has been a part of the global effort to control these diseases since 2006. Then, 2 years ago, working through the U.S. Agency for International Development, the U.S. government joined Uniting to Combat Neglected Tropical Diseases, a partnership that also includes the governments of the United Kingdom and United Arab Emirates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Bank, 13 pharmaceutical companies, and other global health organizations dedicated to accelerating progress toward eliminating or controlling 10 NDTs by the end of the decade. As of 2012, the USAID NTD program has supported the delivery of 820 million treatments globally. Controlling and perhaps eventually eliminating these diseases cannot be achieved by one group or one country acting alone. The problem is too widespread, too complex, and must be attacked on many levels. It will require much effort, funding, and political will. Only by working together can we hope to overcome these ancient causes of human misery and improve the lives of over a billion people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk every day at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listener, topical issues affecting the country. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. The number again, 001-202-465-0318.
And today's topic is the South African election, so please stay tuned. And as we go towards the World Cup, who do you think is the best striker in African football? Is it Demba Ba, Samuel Eto'o? Let us know what your 2014 African All-Star football team looks like by selecting the best goalie, best striker and defender from Africa at our website www.voazimbabwe.com. Voting kicks off Thursday, May 15th. That's next week. So please do go onto the website www.voazimbabwe.com and vote for your best striker, best goalie and best defender from the African selection of players who will be going to the World Cup. Even those who are not going, please do vote. Just a little bit of music from Charles Charamba going out to you from Studio 7 here at the Voice of America. Chris, before we go, just one recap of our top stories.
A faction of the MDC formation led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai insists it will send another letter to Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda